broadcasting live worldwide.
Thank you for tuning in to
TCN, Talk Line Communications Network Radio, America's number one Jewish program.
What are we gonna do with our children? What are we gonna do to show we care? How are we gonna be there for our children when they feel that life has just not been that fair?
Good evening and welcome back to Matt's weekly radio show on Family Matters. Matt, mothers and fathers align, saving kids. Kids of all ages and all stages for all mental health issues, including addiction, molestation, in-school issues, whatever you may be struggling with, call the MASC helpline, and we will try and get you to the right professionals, right resources, so that you can get the help for yourself, for your loved one. Our number is 718-758-0400, and you can call every day from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. We are open weekends, Motzei Shabbos, and all day Sunday, 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. If you know somebody, maybe a neighbor or someone you sit next to in shul usually, you want to share the number with, please jot it down. I'll repeat it. It is 718-758-0400. So tonight, I am so happy to have a chance to have on with us somebody that I've worked with over the last 10 years, and we've worked together on so many different cases, a dear friend and colleague, Regine Galanti. I want to welcome you on tonight. How are you?
Great. Thank you so much for having me, and I'm really just thankful to have an organization like MASC in the community.
Thank you. And Regine, we're going to be speaking more about the topics that we spoke about the last couple of weeks, and that's been anxiety. And during COVID time, you know, anxiety has just, gotten more difficult for so many more people that have underlying issues. Before the COVID, they may have been suffering with some depression and anxiety, mild symptoms. But with COVID, I mean, our hotline has been so, so inundated with families calling for help, for treatment, for support groups, and it's great to know there are support groups for people that suffer with anxiety, but our first recommendation is always to be assessed, so by a professional, and Regine is one of those professionals that you can call on and see, because she practices in Long Island, and the name of her practice is Long Island Psychology. She's in private practice. And, Regine, I want to get right to it and talk about, if you can first give the definition of what really is considered anxiety, and is there ever a time that anxiety is just normal?
Sure, and I think you actually hit the nail on the head in terms of, like, a lot of people with COVID experiencing mental health symptoms in general that have been exacerbated. So we know that stress makes things that you haven't dealt with worse. So it makes sense that a lot of people who maybe have things mostly under control would be feeling more anxious, more stressed, more depressed. But what's useful to know is that some anxiety is definitely normal in general. Anxiety is an emotion, the same as happiness or sadness and, fear. If I am standing in the middle of the street and a car is coming at me, it's good for me to be anxious because that helps me run out of the way. So when people talk about, like, having zero anxiety, that's not healthy. You really want some anxiety in your life because that gets you motivated. It gets you moving to deal with problems. So not all anxiety is bad, and I like people to know that because if your goal is completely anxiety-free living, like, that's not safe.
And not realistic.
No, totally not realistic. The thing that worries me, the thing that I look out for, is when anxiety gets in the way of someone's life. So how are you functioning, and is your anxiety keeping you from functioning at 100%? If it is, then I get concerned. Then I'm going to tell families, I'm going to tell parents, hey, it's time to make a phone call, it's time to get more help. But if a kid gets anxious when something terrible happens or is only anxious in a situation where everybody would feel anxious, or kids are, like, it's normal to be anxious when things change. So everybody can remember kind of back in March when, like, most people's anxiety was through the roof. That's normal. We don't worry about that. But now kind of we're in August, and if things haven't changed and you're still on that high, then I'm going to get a little bit more concerned.
Got it. So we had two moms recently that was on our show, and one of the moms described her son, 16, 17 years old, and was speaking about how they thought it was depression. And only now, after fighting with him, trying to get him to speak to a therapist, struggling, are they finding out that it's anxiety. So first, let's talk about when should you worry about your child worries.
So I actually think that's a great point, that sometimes with a child, what you see is not exactly what's going on. So take the case of that mom who was saying, okay, what we saw was the depression. Because if you leave the anxiety for long enough, then it makes sense that somebody will feel hopeless and down on themselves because they feel like there's no way out of it. But when you kind of deal with the depression, what's underneath is this anxiety. And anxiety doesn't always look like what you expect it to look. I have parents calling me all the time who are telling me, well, my kid doesn't want to separate from me, let's say, but they're not a shy kid otherwise. If I'm in the room, they're not, like, cowering in the corner. They're super social and chatty, and so my kid's not anxious. Or they'll describe a specific kind of anxiety, and then they'll say, well, my kid's not socially anxious because they have no trouble speaking in front of crowds, but they do avoid, let's say, social interactions with more than one friend. So it's more coming from a place of, we have this idea of what an anxious kid should look like, and that's not always correct. The way what I look for in an anxious kid is I actually look for the kind of therapy I do is called cognitive behavioral therapy. So it focuses on changing thoughts and changing behaviors. But the way we understand emotions and the way we understand anxiety is there's actually three parts to anxiety. There's the what I think, so what's in your thought bubble? Like if a tiger is coming at you, what are you thinking? I would be thinking something like, oh, this is dangerous, let me get out of here. This is the danger is the part that's normally what you think. So I'm looking for thoughts like, I can't, any really thoughts about danger or something bad happening. Then there's what I feel in my body. So that's your physiological fight or flight response that goes off whenever you're anxious. And it goes off at a low level pretty much every time you're anxious. So you might feel your heart rate speed up, you might feel your palms sweating, you might feel your breath speeding up, you might feel your muscles tense, and that's another part of anxiety. People like to think of anxiety as only this, like, thought-based thing, but it's also a physical thing. So if your kid is freezing up every time they have to say hi to a new person, And they're not saying, oh, I'm afraid, but you can't get them to kind of communicate. That's also anxiety. And then the last part, so we have what I think, what I feel, and then the last part is what I do when I'm anxious. So typically when someone's anxious, they're going to try and escape or avoid a situation that makes them anxious, which makes sense because, you know, if my house is on fire, it makes sense for me to call the fire department and leave my house, which is good. But if there's a false alarm, if there's a smoke alarm going off in my house and I leave and I call the fire department, even though I know that I burnt something on the stove, then that's not a healthy adaptive response. So what we learn how to do when we're anxious is we learn how to avoid. We learn how to get away from the situation that makes us anxious. And when we avoid, we're okay. If I'm afraid of dogs but I never see a dog, I'm not going to look anxious, except if you put me in the situation that I'm anxious. So with kids, if you're anxious in social situations, but I just don't hang out with my friends, I'm not going to look anxious. I'm going to look fine. But if I force my kid into that situation, then they're going to lose it. Then you're going to see tantrums. You might see behavior problems. I often see this because a kid who's anxious who doesn't want to go to the birthday party might just throw a giant tantrum. And it looks like then I'll have parents call me and say, my kid's acting out. What do I do? But they only act out in situations where I try to get them to do things that make them anxious. So anxiety can look like other things, and it's a huge problem. You know, one in almost three kids can be diagnosed with an anxiety disorder by age of 18. So it's a huge number of kids, and anxiety can go from phobias of things like dogs and cats and weather to social anxiety, which is fear of being judged or fear of public speaking, to OCD, which is when you have these thoughts that bother you, so you do something about them. You do a compulsion, and that makes you feel better. There's also panic, which is that what I feel part, the physiological response, where your anxiety kind of takes a very physical piece. So not all anxiety looks the same. That was a very long answer to your short question.
That's good. but that's, you know, very understandable for this topic because it looks different in every person, like you said. So it can look different. So depending on a child's age, they may think that it's depression or, you know, learning disabilities and they're having a hard time in school and then, you know, depression. But as the years go, you know, as they grow up, what may have been diagnosed when they were younger or middle school, now that they're teenagers, 17, 18, 19, could be diagnosed differently as well. I just want to put it out there.
Yeah, that anxiety changes. It's funny that you mentioned teens. I actually just wrote a book for anxiety in teens. So that's definitely an area that I'm involved in right now.
Do a little commercial for your book. What's
it's called Anxiety Relief for Teens. So,
and is it out? Yeah,
it's out. It's out. You can get it on Amazon.
All right, you got yourself a free commercial for anxiety for teens. So I can't wait. I hope you send us the book so that we can have it for our lending library at MAP.
Oh, sure.
Jane, fantastic. I'd love to read it, and I'd love to make sure to get it out here to parents. So, kids' age changes. So can you give us a few little tidbits from your book, possibly, about some of the ways anxiety shows up in kids at an older age versus a younger age?
So when you're younger, again, like 90% of kids are afraid of something. So saying anxiety shouldn't be there is a pretty faulty kind of view. When kids are babies, they're afraid of loud noises. And then as they grow older, they get more afraid of fantastical stuff, like toddlers and preschoolers are afraid of monsters and separation, right? Your parents leaving, that's a source of stress. And then as you move into elementary school, you get afraid of more like, what if I don't do well in my classes? Or what if my friends don't like me? And then as you move into being a teenager or a preteen, you get super concerned with what your friends think of you and just evaluation. And that's normal. But again, what we're looking for is how much does it affect you that child in their lives, which, you know, it might also not affect the child as much as the parent. So the child can be okay, but the way that the child is okay is by pulling their parents into their anxiety. I always tell parents that, like, adults can be anxious alone. I can be anxious and not bring anyone into it. Kids don't have that ability, because if a child is avoiding, they're making you pick them up from school. They're making you answer 700 questions. They're making you give them tons of reassurance. So I'm looking for how it affects them and how it gets in the way of their functioning to their fullest at every point, while knowing what's normal and what's not.
So what are some of those strategies that parents could help their kids with anxiety?
So I think one of the biggest things that I try to teach parents is that your goal is to support your child through anxiety, not protect them from anxiety. You can't protect someone from something.
Can I interrupt?
Sure.
You, Regina, I'm sorry. I'm so glad you just said that, because as parents, we sugarcoat things many times. Let's say there's anxiety in the family. Let's say a spouse, yourself, a mother-in-law, brother-in-law, whomever has anxiety, and now you see a child with anxiety, and you don't want it to be that. So you, like, make excuses, sugarcoat. So very important that you talk about the parents, please. Thank you.
Yeah, and I have to tell you that in my practice, often parents call, and the things that they want anxiety to be are actually kind of worse than anxiety. So I see this all the time. I know I have a very kind of like, oh, just anxiety, great, because we know what works to help anxiety. We know that cognitive behavioral therapy works for an anxious kid. But if you, like, parents would almost rather it be Lyme disease, which is really hard to treat if you're at that level that you think it's causing anxiety. Or, like, you know, often parents will say, oh, well, I'm getting my child evaluated for PANDAS, which it might be, but PANDAS is super rare and anxiety is super common, and PANDAS treatment is hard. So they're looking for outs to say this is not anxiety. But the truth is, what I try to tell people in my practice is the only way around anxiety is through it. So we need to help you as a parent and your child get techniques to manage their anxiety and learn that, hey, this is not dangerous, because it's not dangerous to, let's say, if it was actually dangerous to face the fear that a child is afraid of, then we'd all be afraid of it. We'd all be saying, don't do that. You can't go to birthday parties. Birthday parties are not safe. We're not saying that. But the child's kind of brain and body is saying, this is dangerous. And when you as a parent say, oh, yeah, if that's, you know, that is dangerous, don't go. We don't have to go. We don't have to go to your friend's house. Then what you're telling your child is really, yep, that's dangerous. You're right. You shouldn't go to birthday parties, which just makes the problem worse. So, and I know parents are in a super tricky situation, because when you have an anxious kid who's, let's say, throwing a tantrum because they don't want to do something, you're stuck, because if you do the thing that I'm saying is the right thing, which is help them face their fear, then your child is going to be miserable. But if you help your child avoid, then your child's going to miss out on valuable experiences in their life, and then you'll also be miserable. So it is a tricky balance between helping your child do the thing that you know is right and also supporting your child so that they don't seem quite as miserable.
Yeah, so a lot of families also then develop coping skills to put up with, oh, I know my daughter doesn't like to go to a birthday party, so this is, you know, we make an excuse, the girl can't go, but we're really not helping them by letting them not do the things they should be doing. So for parents, what role do you want their parents themselves? You know, what could they do to help themselves when they're dealing with an anxious child?
So, good question. So, the first thing you want to know is what parents, I like to be on the lookout for what parents do to make their child's anxiety worse, which are things like giving them too much reassurance. It's good to reassure your child. When a child says, I'm scared, it's okay to say, oh, honey, it's okay, this is scary. But if you're going to say, hey, this is safe 700 times, your child needs more than that. It's not going to work. It seems like it will work. You're like, this time I'll get it. I'm going to tell my child it's safe to go to bed and they're going to get it. But if they didn't kind of internalize that message the first 700 times, they're not going to get it on the 701st. Another thing I look out for is accommodation, we call it, which is what you do to make sure that your child doesn't have to face their anxiety. So your child's afraid of taking the bus, so you drive them to school every single day, even though it's out of your way, and you have to go until late for work, or you miss something. So that's accommodation. So that's something that actually makes anxiety worse. And then sometimes we also respond differently depending on the situation. Sometimes we're super accommodating, and sometimes we're like, no, you have to deal with this on your own, and don't be scared. Telling a kid don't be scared has never helped a kid not be scared. Just FYI. It's like telling someone not to be sad. If I'm sad and someone says, hey, Rosine, don't be sad, I'll be like, but I'm sad. So we have to instead work on validating our kids to say, I know that this is scary for you, but I also know you can do it. I know you can be brave. I say brave all the time in my practice. You're being so brave. I'm so proud of you for doing this thing, even if it's hard, really focusing on that. But then the skills that parents can use to build themselves up are also important. So thinking about just taking care of themselves. What do you do? Because your anxious child is exhausting. Like, it's a lot to deal with an anxious child. So what do you do for yourself? Do you exercise? Do you have a friend you can lean on? Do you, like, for me, sometimes it's my coffee. Like, just taking the time to drink my coffee alone and enjoy it. Like, what moments do you have that are making you stronger so that you can be there fully for your child? Because if you don't, it's the oxygen mask example, right? On a plane, you have to put on your own oxygen mask, and then you can help your kid. If you are anxious yourself and not taking care of it, how do you expect your child to have those skills? And how do you expect to have the bandwidth to deal with your child having those skills? So those are some of the reasons why you really need to focus on yourself and making sure you're strong enough so that you can pass that strength on to your child.
Thank you. So then, you know, we have two schools of thought. One side says, on some occasions, to medicate a child with anxiety. And the other is, don't medicate and do more natural. So we are not advocating for or not, but we do want to put the information out there. So can we talk about the role of medication in treating child anxiety, please?
Sure. So what we know from research is that, again, I mentioned this, the kind of therapy I do is cognitive behavioral therapy, and we know that it's really effective in treating children with anxiety. It gives them tools to manage their own anxiety, and it gives their parents tools to manage their anxiety. And when they learn how to cope, they kind of become their own therapists, and they know how to do the skills by themselves, which is what's great about it. But some kids are really, really anxious, and what we know is that the right medication, I like to think of it as lowers the volume and lets them accept treatment. So some kids I see, parents will say, no medication no matter what. I'll do anything for my kid except medicate them. And I'm not the person who's going to push medication on a family, but I do think it's a valuable tool. And when parents come in saying that, I'll push back a little bit. I don't prescribe. I'm not a psychiatrist, but sometimes a little bit of medication will go a long way. So it's not something you should rule out, but I also always recommend that if your child is a child, you should start with therapy plus medication if you're looking for medication, or therapy alone, and then add the medication if necessary. All kids need the medication, and it's not forever. It's not, these are not medications that, like, I'm scared of, that there are the major side effects. With the right prescriber, like, it doesn't have to be a big deal.
Right. And Regine,
we've worked together on many families over the years, and I know that you work closely with the psychiatrist, and they tweak the meds when needed, and clients really come a long way. Many clients do get off the meds as they get older or as they go out of the school system or whatever reason. And we're talking before COVID. But let's just talk COVID for a minute before we run out of time. So what do you have to say to all the moms that are home, Zooming, working like you, children on the foot all day long, summer now, not everyone in camp? What's a good message you can tell to parents that are struggling with anxiety, whether for themselves or children at home that are struggling with anxiety?
Honestly, my biggest message is, first, I totally hear you, and I know that this is really tough. You're not expected to be the perfect parent who can manage everything. So you need to think about good enough parenting is what I call it. Like, it's okay to be a good enough parent right now, but you also need to think about a way to take care of yourself, because that is the most important part of being there for an anxious kid, is you being able to be there. So think about one thing that you can do for yourself that will help you get the tools. And then the second thing I like to tell them is therapy is great. Therapy is amazing. We have tools that we can give other people to help them in order to manage everything better. So if you need help, don't, you know, the excuse is always, well, it's crazy. Like, coronavirus going on, I don't know how I would find the time. And my message is, okay, but you need to find the time, because you finding the time will help the rest of your week go smoother. So I have been seeing parents when they need privacy from their car, at night, from bathrooms with closed doors. I know it's really tricky right now, but finding the time is really important. And many, many psychologists are doing telehealth. We're doing online therapy. We're doing it on video chat. So it can fit into your life. So find a way to fit it into your life, so that way you can be there and help your kids.
Well, thank you so much, Regine. It's wonderful always chatting with you, and I hope to have you on again soon. Thank you for making the time. And anyone that wants to reach Regine Galante from Long Island Psychology, feel free to give Mask a call, and we'll make sure to have her speak with you. And our number, again, is 718-758-0400. And if you know someone that needs a referral for anxiety or any mental health issue, give us a call. We'll set you up with a therapist via Zoom, telehealth, and in all areas, not only anxiety. But now take advantage of being able to speak to a therapist or Zoom with a therapist from the comfort of your home. We have parents, like you said, that are on our parent groups that we have Zooming now, Regine, and they sit in their closets, literally, in their closet, so that they have time to be on the Zoom meeting. So give us a call, and we can set you up. Thank you, Regine.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. And I want to wish everybody a very good evening and a beautiful Shabbos. And always remember, hang in, hold on, and hug tight. This show is in memory of Simcha Shmuel Ben Moshe. Thank you, and have a good night.
Ow. Are you interested in hosting your own radio show and podcast, or perhaps a TV program? TalkLine Network can help you get on the air from 1 hour weekly to 24 hours a day. Ideal for ethnic, foreign language, medical, business, and religious broadcasting. We also have full-time radio stations for lease, as well as FM HD channels. For more information, please call 212-769-1925. That's 212-769-1925. Or email zevbrenner@gmail.com.
Thanks for listening.